All right, good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for being here this morning, and I do apologize for the quick change in schedule, but of course, as many of us in public health are aware, flexibility is crucial to the work we do. So as Bernadette mentioned, my name is Greg Rosen. I am one of the investigators on the epidemiology program for the Texas Department of State Health Services in Region 65 South, which services the greater Southeast Texas area surrounding the Houston metropolitan area. And today I'm going to be presenting on a topic with which many of us are intimately familiar, and that topic is not just active monitoring of travelers from affected countries in West Africa, but we're going to be talking about something a little more specific, which is the actual implementation of guidelines from the state of Texas for monitoring those travelers. So a little bit different from much of the discourse that's been presented throughout the course of this year. And I want to start off by beginning by telling a quick narrative about this whole active monitoring process. And for many of us in epidemiology, we all know that those big stories first begin with the call. This one, however, was a little bit different because it began with several hundred calls, about a million conference calls, and an Epi Aid team from CDC. And so what happened, as many of us are aware, is that on September 30th, there was a confirmed Ebola case in Dallas, Texas. And that case, unfortunately, resulted in two additional healthcare-associated confirmed cases of Ebola in that same hospital. And then additionally, on top of that, there was a second confirmed travel-associated Ebola case in New York City. And this case was in a physician who had recently returned from Guinea, where he had served at an Ebola treatment center providing direct patient care. And so what these narratives present altogether is that these narratives surmounted both political and public consternation and worry over public health's ability to not only detect individuals who were at risk for an Ebola infection, but the ability to actually facilitate any sort of health screening or medical care that would have to result if there were a suspect Ebola case in the United States. And so that level of fear then prompted, I don't want to just say fear, but that level of concern then prompted the CDC to release some guidance on monitoring and movement of travelers who were at risk for Ebola. And so what happened is upon the release of the CDC guidelines, states throughout the United States then followed up and released their own guidelines with adaptations that were relevant to the states in which they were serving. So what these, specifically in the state of Texas, these guidelines identified risk exposure categories for arriving West African travelers. As many of us know, those categories are low, some, and high risk. And then based on those risk exposure categories, there were recommendations on public health actions based on the travelers' risk exposure and that risk assessment that took place at one of the five screening airports in the United States. Additionally, the guidelines also did specify some active monitoring requirements based on how frequently travelers had to report to public health and as well as reporting from local jurisdictions up through the state office as far as compliance, temperatures, any symptoms indicated. So the guidelines overall provided a framework through which travelers who were in specific local jurisdictions could ultimately have their information recorded at the highest level. And so, as I had mentioned, states throughout the United States had adopted the guidelines that CDC had composed back in October for active monitoring, and they adopted them to the circumstances in which they were applying public health practice. And as you'll see on this map, there are predominantly two shades of blue. There is a light blue and a dark blue, and the dark blue is reflective of states throughout the United States that had more restrictive policies. And as you'll notice, Texas is one of those states. Just a quick anecdote, I recall monitoring one specific traveler who was in our jurisdiction in Texas, and this gentleman wanted to travel to Louisiana, and so I had made the transfer. And about 3 hours later, he gave me a call and says, I think I'm going to stick in Texas because after his conversations with the Louisiana Department of Health, he determined that it would be better to just stay in Texas because in Louisiana, they would have to have an individual come to his home twice daily and he could not be attending anything at the casino. And so Even though those states that are all shaded in the same color blue might reflect some similarities, there are differences in the scale of restrictions between the states depending on the policies that were adopted. So some key differences between the CDC guidance and the Texas interim guidance for monitoring and movement of these at-risk travelers. One predominant one is that one of the recommendations from Texas was for low-risk travelers that local jurisdictions actually go to the homes of these travelers and make initial contact in the homes of these travelers. So if you had a low-risk traveler in a particular jurisdiction, these travelers would essentially, at their homes, receive someone from public health who would reconduct the risk assessment. Secondly, for some or high-risk travelers that were arriving in a Texas airport, the state health department would actually have to physically greet these travelers at the airport and reconduct a risk assessment. So those were two big changes. The last and final key difference is that there were a lot more restrictions on the movement of some risk travelers in Texas. So the CDC guidance does specify limiting the restrictions of movement for some risk travelers to let's say necessary movements outside the household. So for instance, if they had to go grocery shopping, any of those sorts of movements. But in Texas, those guidelines were a little bit more restrictive in that many of these travelers were instructed to simply just stay in their homes and find ways to have other individuals or supportive entities do those necessary things for the 21 days of monitoring. And quickly before I dive into the actual evaluation of implementation of these guidelines at the local level, here's a map of Region 65 South, which is where our regional office does surveillance. And this graphic displays the distribution of travelers between October and December. There were 76 that had arrived for monitoring in this area. And as you'll see by the color gradations, the darkest shade of blue, which is Harris County, is the county that had the most number of travelers that were monitored. Harris County is home to the city of Houston, which is the fourth largest metropolitan area in the U.S., so naturally we're going to have a large number of international travelers. And so as you'll see by this map, logically, Harris County, which has two local health departments inside of it, the City of Houston Health Department and Harris County, did have the most number of travelers monitored. About 70% of the travelers that were assigned to Region 65 South for monitoring resided in Harris County. And this map right here, or this graph, I should say, quickly shows the total number of travelers that were monitored daily. It's a graph that goes over time between when active monitoring began in October through December 31st that displays the total number of travelers that were monitored by all local health departments in this region. And so two major events in this time. So the CDC announced enhanced screening for travelers from Mali in mid-November. And as you'll see, that didn't really change a whole lot as far as the number of travelers that were being monitored. We didn't have a whole large number of travelers from Mali. But if you look at Christmas Day, the total number of travelers that were monitored daily leading up to the Christmas holidays increased substantially. So we were at an average of about 16 to 18 daily prior to December, and then that quickly shot up to a peak of 28 travelers by New Year's Eve. And so quickly to get into some of the frameworks of this evaluation, the way that we actually conducted an evaluation of how these guidelines were implemented is we consulted with our local health department. We wanted to ask them questions about the challenges they had implementing the guidelines that were released by Texas, as well as some feedback that they could provide to the state. We're in Texas, we are very intimate with our local health departments. It's a very decentralized system. But we still want to engage our partners across public health. We use these interviews as a way to gather information as far as guideline implementation from a local perspective, and then to more scientifically assess this evaluation, we identified a process evaluation plan. And that involved using program performance indicators, which are noted here, as design inputs, outputs, and outcomes from many logic models. And then we assigned three evaluation measures to that. So those three evaluation measures that we used were clarity and comprehensiveness, context, and resources. So to begin with this evaluation, we first began looking at the clarity and comprehensiveness of the Texas interim guidance. Some of the first feedback that we received from our local health departments in those first 3 months of active monitoring was the confusion over the media that local health departments could be using to contact these travelers. The guidelines really didn't specify if those could be emails, texting, phones, and in many ways, those guidelines were left pretty fluid to allow for some flexibility because nobody, when those guidelines were released, nobody could have predicted how long this active monitoring could have actually lasted. And as many of us are aware, it's lasted quite a long time at this point. And so those guidelines were sort of up in the air, and it did allow for some flexibility, but there was some confusion from our local partners over the requirements as far as how to communicate with these travelers. In addition, when there was incorrect information on those traveler manifests that were assigned to the local health departments, it was unclear as to whose responsibility it actually was to find that correct information. So was it up to the local health department to contact the travelers to then get that information only to be assigned to another jurisdiction? Or should the regional health departments be doing that? Should the state health department be communicating again with CDC to get this information? There was a lot of ambiguity over whose responsibility it actually was because those weren't laid out in the guidelines. And then lastly, as many of us are aware, there have been some persons under monitoring that have actually had to be medically evaluated. And as the guidelines do specify, if somebody does show an elevated temperature or any symptoms compatible with an Ebola infection, they should be medically evaluated. The challenge was when those guidelines were actually implemented, ambulance and EMS personnel were very hesitant to show up to someone's home who was under monitoring and possibly a suspect Ebola case. And this did result in some consternation, you could say, between public health at the local level, at the regional and at the state level, and our EMS personnel throughout the state of Texas. And so moving on to the context, one of the greatest advantages in Texas in implementing these guidelines is the health structure of Texas. As I had mentioned, I'm with the regional office in Texas, and one advantage with the regional offices is that those regions can support the local health departments in many of the monitoring activities. So in our office in particular, we assist our regions in determining jurisdiction and clarifying any issues with our central office. So in many ways, we function as a liaison between the state and our locals, and that's really, really helpful because if there's any concerns, we can interface directly with both entities to resolve them. But one of the challenges is that at the most local level, surveillance activities still have to take place when there's this very large, unprecedented active monitoring response occurring simultaneously. And that oftentimes involves rotating local health department personnel through active monitoring and reporting. and the greatest challenge with this is that oftentimes there was a lot of information that had to be repeated to the local health departments because different personnel were assigned. And so one of the challenges with implementing the guidelines was that our locals were not always institutionally informed of the most updated guidelines on active monitoring from Texas because they had a rotating staff that was engaging in these responsibilities. Additionally, the home visits, which I had mentioned, posed quite a few geographical and capacity-related challenges on our local health departments. And to demonstrate this, I'm going to show you a map of our region again. This is Region 65 South in Texas. As you'll see, the counties that are highlighted in the dark green color are all counties without local health departments. So the regional offices function as those local health departments. So if we have a traveler that is in one of those seven counties, so that if their address falls in one of those seven jurisdictions, our regional office will then have to provide that active monitoring for them. And per the requirements, they will also have to conduct an initial in-home visit. Now, this office, as I had mentioned, is located in Houston, which is as far as 2 hours away from those other areas. And so there are some challenges with having to comply with the guidance when these geographical barriers are not accounted for. So lastly, moving on to the resources component. Many of us are aware with the check and report Ebola cell phones or care cell phones that are provided to all travelers. That was an idea that was implemented originally by the New York City Health Department to help travelers who may not have had international cell phones. Then it was ultimately relayed all the way up to CDC's Division of Global Migration and Quarantine. And it's been implemented. So all travelers that are arriving at these screening airports from the affected countries are provided a burner phone and can use that phone is what the local health departments can use to communicate with these travelers. And so there's always going to be some way that travelers can reach or that local health departments can reach the travelers and vice versa. Now the challenge is that with those burner phones, they still have to be activated. And many travelers, you know, whether these are the summerist travelers that the state is trying to actually meet at the airport, or they're travelers that have recently arrived and are at their homes already, they might not have activated those cell phones. And so that was a big challenge for many of our local health departments, because some of the guidance that was provided in Texas was to communicate using the care phones. And if the care phones aren't activated, sometimes there were many barriers to communicating with these travelers. So for instance, many of the travelers' emergency contacts had to be contacted for a way to meet these travelers. Additionally, the requirement to actually greet travelers at the airport proved slightly problematic when many of the agencies that were required for cooperation to facilitate these kinds of events were not exactly on the same page as public health for the Ebola response. So for instance, when you have to go through security, have to meet someone at the gate and screen them, do a risk assessment, many airlines are going to be a little bit concerned because they're not exactly, they're not quite as aware of the individual's level of risk, whether there's any passengers on board who might be at risk. And so communicating with entities outside of public health proved very challenging at the regional level. Additionally, there were lots of travelers. I mentioned that there were 76 travelers assigned to this region between October and December of 2014. That number is now over 300 in June. So there are lots of travelers that have to be accounted for. And with such a high volume, there are some communication issues that result when there's misinformation distributed to the region and the local health departments in that region. And to provide a little bit of an illustration of how this works, I'm going to show why this is a little bit challenging. So we begin with Customs and Border Protection and CDC at the airports conducting those risk assessments on those travelers. That information is then sent to Texas through CDC's Information Exchange, or EPIX. And then once the state receives those manifests from CDC and the Division of Global Migration and Quarantine, that information is then sent to the region and to the local health department simultaneously in a Microsoft Excel file. So that does involve a lot of manpower. You have to take the EPIX notification and then convert it into an Excel file and input everything. But sometimes if the local health department is not included, the region will sometimes then have to forward it along to them and make note of that. Now, I have here a map of the city of Houston. The city of Houston and Harris County are health departments that work within the same county, and so sometimes there's not really a lot of clarity as far as how much, which jurisdiction it should properly go to. So if there's misinformation, that a local jurisdiction will then send that back up through the region, and then we will send that back through our state. And sometimes the state is able to resolve those issues, so they'll communicate back to us, and then we will communicate that information back to the region. Now, there are some issues that take place that the state is not able to resolve. And so the state will then have to relay that up back through CDC, and then CDC will have to provide an answer to the state, who will then subsequently provide an answer to the region, and we will relay that to our locals. And so it's quite a long chain of communication, isn't it? And this can prove a little bit challenging because this can take place over a day. And when the interim guidance in Texas specifies that travelers have to be contacted within 12 hours of that manifest being assigned to the local jurisdiction, we're seeing already about a day of delay with that. And so in many ways, this sort of chain of information, there might not even be a solution for this because this is naturally how public health works. But at the same time, this is one of the challenges in complying with the guidance that was provided to the state of Texas. And so some conclusions and quick implications for practice. Because of the way the way jurisdictions work in Texas with the regional presence, and the hard work of our state office, our regional office, and all of our locals, we were able to achieve 100% participation among not only the local health departments that were assigned travelers, but they were able to successfully monitor every traveler that was assigned. So that was great news. But one of the challenges is that the guidelines were not really aligned with the quantity of travelers that were being received or the duration of active monitoring that had to take place. In addition, the resources that were required to sustain this effort really outweighed the capacity of many of our local health departments. So in the future, one thing that our agency and our local health departments have recommended is to do a quantitative assessment of the amount of resources required to engage in this very large effort in Texas. And ultimately, this evaluation really highlights the importance of communicating with local health departments, not only prior to when these guidelines are released, but having routine communications and information as far as the capacities and making that information available to across different levels of public health. So when guidelines are written and for implementation, the capacity and the personnel and the staffing needs are met. Finally, the evaluation we conducted also highlights the importance of routinely evaluating guideline implementation for public health. And not only for these kinds of unprecedented responses like the Ebola response, but for just any public health event that does require implementation at the most local level. And so quickly, I'd like to acknowledge my great team in Region 6-5 South that helped with this evaluation. That's Dr. Huai Lin, who's our regional epidemiologist, as well as Krista Swanson and Derek Shaw, who are some corresponding authors on this evaluation. And then most importantly, I'd like to thank our local health department partners who implemented these guidelines and had, and you know, continue to work incessantly monitoring travelers and making, getting all the information they need to make this whole process run incredibly smoothly. And I'd also like to thank the Texas Department of State Health Services Emerging and Acute Infectious Disease Branch, who has been, and that office has been incredibly helpful in sorting out guidance, in proactively reaching out and asking for feedback on the guidelines that they have written, and providing countless support for us as we monitor all these travelers. And finally, CDC's Division of Global Migration and Quarantine, specifically the Houston Quarantine Station, that has helped tremendously with identifying misinformation on travelers. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you for sharing your time with me this morning.
So a lot of heads nodding, including my own, as we were listening to Greg share his experience. Do we have any time for one or two questions?
Question, in Pennsylvania, we just followed CDC's guidelines for monitoring. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering why decided to do the additional assessment at the airport, and in doing those, did you learn anything differently from what CDC or DGHQ had provided?
That's a great question. So the logic that was provided to us from our state office was that many travelers that are returning from these affected countries in West Africa might not be forthcoming about possible exposures that took place in West Africa, mostly because they want to return to their final destinations before and feel comfortable at home because they did not want to be subject to any quarantine orders that had to take place. And so the guidance that was provided by Texas was really ultimately as a way to account for some of that misinformation. I can speaking anecdotally from a regional perspective, we did not learn anything different. So most individuals who reported a certain kind of exposure in West Africa taking place or lack of exposure reported that information consistently both at home, at the airport, and when they had originally been screened.
Has there been any talk of discontinuing those additional assessments at the airport?
No, not yet. There's certainly been discussion, but those guidelines still stand.
Because I'm just wondering how you all came up with the resources to do this and what isn't being done in the interim, because there are only so many resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then from personal perspective, having returned from Sierra Leone not that long ago, the cell phone I got didn't work. My mom and I constantly recorded the temperature of 94 degrees. So I just kind of wondered, really what we're accomplishing with all of that.
That is a great question. I will try to answer part of that. So I'm trying to think of a way to tackle this question too. So as far as the resources that had to be galvanized and mobilized to address these challenges, in many ways in Texas, as I mentioned, we're very fortunate to have regional health departments that essentially suffices additional capacity. And so in many ways, our office provided those additional resources to assist with any issues that came up with monitoring. I can, speaking on behalf of some of our local health departments, I know the city of Houston activated epidemiologists from other program areas to take part in active monitoring. So they have a staff of about 8 or 9 epidemiologists that are monitoring the 20 plus travelers they have daily. in that jurisdiction. So oftentimes what it meant was to keep up with the guidance that was recommended, there had to be additional assets that were activated to comply with the guidance. Of course, that came with additional feedback as it provided. And as far as the point that you were making about the resources, we also found that many travelers, their cell phones didn't work, they were complaining about their thermometers. And one of the ways that we tried to address those concerns was we worked through our Houston quarantine station, which is supervised by the Division of Global Migration and Quarantine. They had all those resources available at that office to provide for travelers that had either broken care cell phones, broken thermometers. We had an additional stockpile of thermometers in our own office. But of course, those are all resources and resource intensive, and we really had no way to really track or evaluate the sheer number of travelers that were having those issues.